Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody made it through the weekend all right. And my goodness, Braves fans, hang on. You got one more shot to make it to the playoffs. What a wild baseball game a little earlier to add to a wild weekend. So we are here today to help ease your pain. You know, let it out. Let us know what you think. Yeah. Oh, we don't have the TV hooked up. I'll be watching it on my laptop here momentarily as the Braves and Mets are underway in game two after, it feels sort of like deja vu. Have you been there before? You feel like you've got 1-1? Oh, and then no, you don't. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, no, you don't. That's sort of the way things have gone lately. Yeah, welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. It's Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from Auburn Sports, Drew back at the controls. And, we want to hear from you. Give us your thoughts. We will give you ours on anything that has gone on, and especially, I am sure, Saturday afternoons.
Yeah, today you don't give thoughts on anything that has gone on. Today we're talking about the Auburn.
Somebody has an idea about something else. Braves fans might want it. Braves fans might want to chime in.
Today, we were going to talk about fall baseball practice and basketball practice.
Tomorrow's a show where we can get into all the stuff that happened in the world of college football. Today is a show where I feel like we're going to be breaking down Auburn, Oklahoma.
Are you trying to tell our callers what to ask about?
There's not too much to break down. It's finishing. It's being able to finish a game. And that is something I was surprised. I want to get to some of these numbers here in a little bit. There are some very disturbing numbers that, we've talked about.
These aren't the numbers Hugh Freeze started the press conference with.
No, they're not. I mean, there's some very good numbers, too. I mean, there's some really good numbers that might surprise people that are even better. And I'm sure Coach Freeze would like, folks to realize these numbers as well, some of the numbers that Auburn has put up. But these aren't just Auburn numbers. Did you realize that over Hugh Freeze's career – as a head coach, he has won 44% of games decided by 7 points or less. And over the last 5 years, and this is thanks to Stuart Carter, Stat Tiger, over the last 5 years, Hugh Freeze has won 33% of games decided by 7 points or less. That is very concerning because it's not always because the other team has had more talent.
Right.
Last season, when Auburn lost games in the fourth quarter, you could point to a lack of depth and superior talent in the opponent. When Auburn had leads in the fourth quarter last season against Ole Miss and Alabama and Georgia, they were facing teams with better talent. They were facing teams with more depth. They were facing teams that were favored by considerable margins in those games. And when those teams came back in the fourth quarter, you could point to the personnel.
Just wait till we have more talent.
And those are three of Hugh Freeze's seven losses at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Through a year and a half.
But in the other four, New Mexico State, Cal, Arkansas, and the Oklahoma game on Saturday, I don't know if the opponent's talent edge was overwhelming in any of those games. I think it's disappointing to see Auburn have a game where they play. I mean, if you hit stop If you're watching that game and you hit pause when Jalen McLeod makes the sack on fourth down and forces a turnover on downs about 4 minutes into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
If you hit pause.
Oh, well, even before before Jarquez's run.
But yes. When on the turnover on, you're right, Jarquez has a run on the next play. But just right then, when Auburn takes over up 11 with about 11 minutes to go in the game at midfield, it is the best game Auburn has played under Hugh Freeze.
Not even close.
It's the best game Auburn has played in years. And Auburn is on the verge of beating a ranked team for the first time since Ole Miss 2021.
And that was also with leaving points on the field in the first half, where at halftime I said to you, Dan, you hope this doesn't come back to haunt Auburn because they ought to be up 24-7.
And it usually does. It usually does in those situations.
It usually does, and it did.
When you have multiple possessions where you feel like you should get points and you come away empty-handed, often that tends to come back. I mean, sometimes you're able to run away from it.
And the last possession?
There are probably
in the first half.
You could say the possession that ends on the 1 yard line,
right.
And the possession that ends with the missed field goal at the end of the first half feel like possessions.
You've got to get points there.
He pointed to four, and it was those two in the second half. It was the one that resulted in another missed field goal, where Auburn only took a minute 31 off the clock.
Yes, and could have run at least two more minutes had they just handed the ball off.
And then, of course, that possession that led to the pick six.
That led to the pick six. I mean, there's so much to talk about. I mean, what is the run option when you're five wide in the backfield?
Other than quarterback draw, I don't know, and I don't know if that's even a call that he has.
Then don't let the ball go in the air. If you don't have any running backs, you're keeping it yourself.
Going five wide and running a quarterback draw right then might have been a great call.
Are you talking about on the play where the pick six is?
Yes.
See, I'm thinking
it's five wide.
On that play, I mean, you've already mismanaged the clock on the previous series, which is the one that I think is even more infuriating. Which is when you take over up 11, you get the first down with Jarquez, and then there are two pass plays which stop the clock and give Oklahoma, you know, a sliver of daylight, which allows them to come back and ultimately win the game. I mean, we were talking about on that third and four, as it happened, we were like, I can understand the desire for a first down there because you want to keep your offense on the field.
First down.
The cost of a turnover is, you're right, it's unthinkable how
was the game.
That
That's the cost of a turnover was the game.
It's the game right there, but it's, I mean, no, the decision to multiple times, the decision to, and it's amazing how in the aftermath of the Arkansas game, we talked about Hugh Freeze's desire historically to throw the football, even in times when it doesn't feel like the best thing for either the team he has or the moment.
Yeah.
And it comes up. Did you realize Auburn went into that game? I didn't realize this one until the pregame show when I think Brad Law mentioned it. I think Auburn is now third from the bottom, but I believe Auburn went into the game Saturday last in the conference in rushing attempts.
Yes,
and I believe they are currently either 13th or 14th in rushing attempts per game in the SEC.
Jarquez Hunter is averaging 13 carries a game, 13 carries a game through five games. I'm not calling, and I don't think anyone is calling for him to carry the ball 30 times a game, but you up that by 50% and get him to 20 carries a game. And I think just from that, Auburn's at least 4-1. If you had just done that.
And it's vexing because there had been, I mean, especially in the first three quarters, you felt like there had been progress made. I mean, Oklahoma goes between the touchdown run and the deep pass.
Auburn had shut. They had two first downs.
Oklahoma has two first downs and five or six punts.
Wow.
It is a drought from the Oklahoma offense.
Auburn was stuffing them, but I mean,
I said they look like
any defense. Yeah. I mean, there is a chance that there could be a big play, and I'm not absolutely not laying anything on the defense. They played so well after the great run by Michael Hawkins Jr., after that 48-yard touchdown run until that 60-yard pass. But, I mean, defenses, you know, when if you're given opportunity after opportunity and you can't put a ball game away, there is a much higher percentage as the game goes on that they're liable to hit a play.
Yeah, and when your defense is playing like that, it's up to the offense to keep it from being a one-possession game or a two-possession game when you're being given positive field position and the other team's defense is on the field as much as Oklahoma's was in that game. So, no, it's a total missed opportunity. I mean, you can look at all five. You can look at all three of the losses as missed opportunities. This one
this is the biggest,
but it because yeah, Auburn was in more, because Auburn was more firmly in control yes. of the Oklahoma game than they ever were.
No, and the against other two, Cal you felt Arkansas. Like they could have, and this one they did, and they just needed to be guided. To the finish.
The missed opportunities against Cal and Arkansas are the plays that put Auburn in the hole yeah. that they then had to try to dig out of and rally against Cal and against Arkansas. This game, Auburn was well ahead on the scorecards, right? After three, like Auburn was in control and the three and out by the four and out by Oklahoma that gave the ball back to Auburn was just sort of that's the cherry on top. And I mean, yeah, I'm not surprised to see.
Yep.
I mean, ESPN.com would tell you 95-96% chance of winning when you force that stop in the early fourth quarter. You know, that's a 19 out of 20 shot.
Yep.
I can think about it was 20 years ago, but there was a Marty Schottenheimer had a 14-2 season for the Chargers and had a playoff game where his team was up 8 or 9 with the ball late, and some questionable decisions cost them that game, and he wasn't the coach a couple of days later. Again, not calling for a coaching change, but that's the severity of when you fumble away something where you were in that kind of position.
All right, we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840. On the Drive text box, you can also check out the podcast presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. That's available wherever you get your podcasts.
And it's Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the Monday edition of the Drive. And let's get to the phones. And Joel gets us started. Hey, Joel.
Hey, Bill. How you doing, sir?
All right.
This is Joel. I work Gate 11 at Jernair
Stadium. Oh, man. I was just talking.
I want to call and see how you're doing.
I'm doing all right. I went and got the left. I got my left wrist checked yesterday, and it's there's not a break. It was just a bad sprain. So amazingly, it came through pretty well. I guess that's the problem. I was paying a little attention to you back behind me, and not attention to the fact that there was one more step there. Hey, I'm glad to hear from you.
I just wanted to check on you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
You take care now.
It sounds like I need to find some video of this.
Probably would be hilarious. Yeah. I mean, all right. So yeah, Joel's there at the gate, and I always speak to him on the way out. So as we come down, you know, it's right there down the ramp outside gate, whatever 10.
I was going to say, were you checking the message boards?
No. I mean, I had my phone so I could listen to the post game because I was walking with my wife. And we come right down there, you know, outside the little gate where there's like two or three, there's a few steps up, then you go up the ramp and you're right there at the elevator to go mm-hmm. up to the press box. And we were coming down from our seats in section 10. And he said something like, going to be a fun show Monday. And I went, oh, yeah. And as I turned back, I thought I had stepped to the bottom step. Oh. And there was like one more.
Oh, I hate that.
And I mean, yeah, I was one of those, yeah, it's probably really funny looking as I whiffed because there wasn't anything there. And I went down. I went down pretty dang hard. But fortunately, I had the padded computer bag was in my right hand.
Oh, that's
skin,
good.
It turned purple immediately, but it's okay. Wow. You can still see my thumb is purple.
Yeah.
And both knees got scraped up a little bit, but almost all the weight was on my left wrist.
Yeah.
And had my phone in my hand, completely demolished the screen protector, which protected the phone.
Nice.
Did a good job. I'll give a very good endorsement to that that brand of screen protector. But yeah, a couple of guys helped me up, and I'm embarrassed, you know, but it's like, ooh, I was amazed that I could walk.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you're okay.
It hurt my knees.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, Saturday night, as painful as the game was, this was even more painful. Couldn't sleep at all Saturday night. Went yesterday and got it checked.
Because you've already had
it's not broken.
You've had the hip worked on, and when if you fall on the new one, if you fall on the new one, I don't know what they do.
Oh well, I was trying to avoid that, but yeah, it's I'm all right. Added a little injury
I guess there was the recent operation on the hand too.
Yeah, so I had carpal tunnel on the other wrist.
Quick update: Braves lead 1-0 bottom of the second, game two. It's a must win for the Braves.
Oh, that's right. They have to win now. Yep. And of course, now the Diamondbacks are pulling for the Mets because if the Mets sweep,
Mets are in already.
Then the Mets are the two seed. The Diamondbacks are the 3 wild card. If the Braves win, the Braves are the 2nd wild card, and the Mets are the 3rd.
Presumptive NL Cy Young Award winner Chris Sale not pitching for the Braves today. Woke up, the back was not feeling great. It was a situation that.
Well, Schwellenbach was fabulous.
A situation that got worse over the weekend, and they decided today he couldn't go in either game. So the Braves starting Grant Holmes, the rookie, in game two, a must win. They'd love to be starting Sale in one of these two games.
Well,
today.
They would have loved to have won game one and be able to keep everybody. That's the way it looked. I mean, it was 3-0 Braves going to the 8th, and Schwellenbach was just twirling a gem.
Five straight hits or something like that, or was it more than that? I can't remember, but it was rough.
The game went bonkers.
Yeah, six run eighth for the Mets. The Braves score 4 in the bottom of the 8th. The Mets scored 2 in the top of the 9th.
Yeah, Francisco Lindor having one of the great NL MVP runner up seasons ever. Because I think we know who's getting it, but he's having an outstanding season as the Mets shortstop. Big reason why they've been able to rally. He hits the game winning homer for the Mets. He is not in the lineup for game two. The Mets keeping.
I would imagine, and there was talk from both sides that if they won game one, they'd try to have everybody as rested as possible.
I mean, you got to do that
series, which starts tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, 334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Jones, hang on. You're up first when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
For loving expert care,
11390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. All right, we're just looking at some other numbers. Kudos to Stat Tiger Stuart Carter, who points out that over Hugh Freeze's career as a head coach in college football, his teams average 89th nationally in turnovers. His offense is going to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
One of the things we were talking about here, and Jones, we'll get to you in just a sec, is he has got to – the head coach has got to guide, lead, make sure that teams can close things out.
Yeah, he's got to manage the game better, in my opinion.
And that has been a problem. I mean, I was thinking about this on the way over here, that one of the things that and Hugh Freeze will tell you what he's thinking. And we have been very thankful for that. Then a couple of times you go, ooh, maybe you shouldn't have said that. But – this summer, remember when he caught a lot of flack for saying he should have been 4-0 against Nick Saban? And look back at those now, and yeah, they probably should have, just like Auburn should have won this ball game. But you've got to close it out. You've got to change. You know, when you have the ball in the lead and the game is getting late, you don't have to keep doing the same things because something bad could happen.
Yep.
And it has quite a few times.
Jarquez had some of his best runs there in the fourth quarter.
Oh, right? He was getting stronger.
Yes.
They were getting tired.
Yes. Take advantage of it.
He had one of his best runs
in the fourth quarter. He had one of his best runs in the fourth quarter
He had half his yards in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
He only had 3 carries.
No, I mean, I would, as much as we love, coaches being candid and don't forget Tiger Talk on Wings later tonight, but I would probably advise Hugh Freeze against relitigating past games and talking about what should have happened and what didn't, because at some point, I mean, when you're in situations where teams win 19 out of 20 times repeatedly,
and you're the 20th,
and you keep being the 20th, I think you can talk about what should have happened, but I mean, it's probably easier to talk about what should have happened than talk about what actually did happen and what should have happened instead. Because that's, I mean, to me, the lingering questions, I think, you know, Hugh Freeze made a lot of good points this morning. But I would think the lingering question, I mean, I wasn't surprised at all that after that opening statement, the questions were about, well, what could you have done differently in the Oklahoma game? Because there didn't seem to be a ton of that. There seemed to be more, keep in mind what I inherited. This is what's happened so far.
Well, he did.
This
say
is the
he
progress.
Regretted. He did say he regretted.
He did, but he yeah, he got more in depth, you know, after the first question. I think that's helpful. But this should have happened. That should have happened. That's increasingly sounding kind of tone deaf.
And I will take blame. I did chicken out. I didn't answer. I didn't ask the exact question that I was asking you guys about beforehand, and I still want to know the answer to the question. Is he not on the headset comm with Peyton Thorne? Can you not just say, it's not an RPO this time, just run. I mean, because instead of saying we've got to put him in better situations to not, it makes it sound like, well, we keep leaving the decision up to Peyton and he's making the wrong decision. It's your decision. It is your decision. You can tell your quarterback. You've got until 15 seconds left on the play clock to let him know exactly what you want.
Yeah, I was sort of left wondering if there was a disconnect between sort of what they've drilled into Peyton as far as what should happen when he sees a certain defense versus also factoring in the situation and how much time is left and how many possessions are left in the game. And things like
that's what that comm should be about. Yeah. I think Peyton, if Peyton's getting up there, they're expecting Peyton to get up there and do what they've drilled him to do. You see this, you do that.
Sure, but
if the situation is different, that's on the coach or whoever's on the comm to say, hey, remember, this is the situation.
And I guess specifically I'd be thinking about after the Jarquez run. When Auburn has the lead in the fourth quarter,
yeah, it's
about 10 minutes left.
First and 10, and the clock can roll down to about 9 minutes and under if you just hand the ball off.
And you made the observation that you thought Oklahoma's defense was starting to look a little winded on that last Jarquez run, and it feels like the moment
they were deflated because they'd just gotten stopped on 4th and 10, and Jarquez rips off that run. You could see it in the way they were carrying themselves, and Auburn helped them out.
And it's like, I get that. Okay, maybe you've drilled into Peyton and into this offense that when you see a certain defensive look, well, you got to check out of the run and call a pass.
Yeah, just forget the RPO then. Just go with an R.
Right.
You know, forget
that.
It's
not that hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Jones has been hanging on for a while. Hey, Jones.
How you gentlemen doing?
All right.
I hear you. Brian, let me ask you something. What is the buyout situation for Freeze from the standpoint of, I know certain years Auburn owes him nothing. How long would he be at Auburn before that be the case?
I think he's got a 6-year contract, doesn't he?
I think so.
I can't remember
years,
the
percentage. They owe him nothing even if they terminate him?
Yeah, but you know that's not going to happen.
No, because contracts, they're going to roll over at some point.
I think it's around $5 million right now. The way it's structured.
Yeah. Bottom line is,
it's 75%, I believe.
Gentlemen, we've seen enough sample size of this guy that it's not going to happen. When you look at Auburn in relation to the other teams that Auburn competes with, I don't care how good a recruiter he is, he doesn't have what it takes to be man enough to make decisions and get in people's face during games and make things happen. So consequently, Auburn has lost all the respect of the national media, and they've lost the respect of the opponents. And I don't see it getting any better. He's going to probably lose 7 or 8 games this year. I don't care if you get a great quarterback next year. That great quarterback could get injured. Then what do you got? Bottom line is, I've seen enough of this guy to know that if I had the money, I'd buy him out right now. But I don't have that kind of, you know, Bill Cameron-type money. But the bottom
well,
line
I'm sorry
is,
for you, then. I'm really sorry for you.
The sample size has been exposed, Hugh. It ain't happening. You're not going to make it happen at Auburn. And yeah, it's about time for all of us to wake up and realize it's not going to get better record-wise. You may get a recruit or two, but that's not going to cut it at Auburn. War Eagle, gentlemen.
Appreciate the call, Jones.
Yeah, I can understand the feelings. Right. However, before Hugh Freeze came to Auburn, he had one losing season and was it 15 years or whatever as head coach. So he does have a high percentage of winning record other schools.
And one thing he said, I don't think that he and Auburn will lose the respect of the opponents because they know he can dial up some plays.
Right.
We've heard people talk about, man, he can get receivers open, he can dial up the plays. I don't doubt that at all. He can recruit.
Yes.
There's no question about that. But things are a little different than they were a few years ago. More teams, I see more teams that have talent than they did, and you're not going to be able to out-talent Alabama and Georgia and Texas.
No.
You might be able to get there. What you've got to do when you get there, though, I think he can. He's shown he can get teams to where they are. They've got the opportunity to beat those teams.
Yep.
But now we've got to see the ability to consistently beat teams when you have them in a position where the game should be won.
And we got to remember with Freeze right now, he's recruiting at a level that nobody at Auburn has recruited since Pat Dye. And that was really before recruiting was systemically rated, right? I mean, you might have a guy here, a guy here rating classes, but it wasn't done to the extent it is now. And that is what Auburn has needed badly for the past couple of decades. It's really held them back. If you want to know why Gus Malzahn wasn't as successful as he needed to be, or Brian Harsin took the program down a couple of notches, it was because of recruiting. So that is happening right now. It's not a complete process at all. He's had a top eight class. Right now he's got the number four class in the country in 25 and the number one class in 26. So if he can find a way to keep some momentum going recruiting,
you need to win some of those games, though.
Win on the field, have the recruits still believe in his future and his vision for Auburn. If you can do that and Auburn can start bringing those really talented guys, then let's start judging him when he has equal or better talent than everybody.
You don't want the only argument for your retention to be how well you're doing on the recruiting trail, because then what happens if that slips away?
It's one of the number one arguments.
Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, you can. There have been some people that can recruit really well,
but he has a track record of winning too.
But to point to the recruiting trail would also suggest, like, okay, well, if the recruiting prowess were to slip immediately, you know, if this class were to break up between now and the end of the season,
well, then suddenly, you're talking about Billy Napier, and it's the same.
So I would think that it's premature to talk about the buyout or replacing him or anything.
I think it's unless something just completely unforeseen, and it might even have to be off the field, happens. Hey, Auburn's not making a coaching change this year, and I'd be really surprised if they did next year. We can talk about
next season, but I mean, I'm saying that for this season, I mean, usually if you're losing your job in year two at an SEC program, things have collapsed and devolved from where they were when you arrived.
I think that's a really good point, but I also point out this: Billy Napier, by bringing him back a third year, you have put Florida behind the eight ball even more. Their recruiting is 15th out of 16 teams in the SEC right now. Everybody knows he's going to be fired. So now you put yourself in a difficult position. Had they have made this move at the end of last season, the new guy could have come in and maybe built up the recruiting class a little bit more instead of it falling to pieces, and then would have had that new coach boost going into this season, no matter what happened on the field.
And there have been a couple of prominent SEC coaches who were let go after year two, during or after year two, for performance-based reasons. Yep. That's Brian Harsin. That's Chad Morris, who went 0-8 in year two at Arkansas, even though he inherited a mess with the way things had gone under Bielema. They still made the decision after year two that things were getting worse, things were going in the wrong direction, and they hired Sam Pittman instead. So it's not totally off the table, but I would say it's premature.
Very premature.
I think Auburn's too competitive in these games, even the games they've lost, to be thinking like that. What has changed, and I made this point after the Arkansas game, Brian, Auburn is now 0-2 in conference. Hugh Freeze is probably looking at a second straight season where Auburn is going to be 3-5 or worse in the SEC. And I think it's totally fair to say, if you're 3-5 in year three, if you start your tenure, your tenure at an SEC program, going 3-5 or worse in conference play in each of your first 3 years, the only place that would give you a fourth year is Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
the only place in the conference that would give a coach who starts with three losing seasons a fourth year is Vanderbilt. So what has changed because you lost Arkansas and Oklahoma is it is imperative that Auburn go 4-4 or better next year in the SEC you're talking about keeping the Hugh Freeze experiment alive. And he's got to do whatever he can. And maybe that, you know, he's proud of playing some of these young guys who are going to be a part of next year's team. You know, guys who could be, you know, huge pieces next year. That's great. But it is imperative you do whatever you have to do to reverse some of these results. Yeah. Do whatever you have to do personnel-wise.
And that sort of gets to something we haven't really talked about here today, but I'm sure somebody will bring it up, is that's why Peyton Thorne continues to be your starting quarterback now, because you've got to do everything you can to win every single game. Each game, you've got to put the guy out there that gives you the chance to win.
Because we could be talking a month from now, and it's a different situation.
Well, let's
could
talk.
Be, but right now it's Peyton.
Right. No, I'm talking about Freeze's future.
Oh, you're right.
Well, I know,
you come back home if you're 2-6 coming in, and something happens at Vandy.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Everything's on the table if you don't win a game between now and Kentucky. Everything as far as revamping things.
Yeah, and you've got Vandy coming in who's playing better than they have.
So I would, but as far as quarterback goes, I mean, at no point Saturday did I think Auburn would have improved their chances of winning by switching from Peyton to Hank.
No.
At no point Saturday watching that game. And I would go so far as to say, if you believe there was a point Saturday, specifically Saturday in the Oklahoma game, if you think there was a point where Auburn should have made the switch from Peyton to Hank, you might be blinded by anti-Peyton Thorne rage, and or you might not be able to analyze this team rationally at this point. Because I thought that was, I mean, until the game clinching, you know, the interception at the end.
But look, that happens. That happens to pretty good
it's
players.
It's a huge
mistake.
You can
get baited into a play like that. It doesn't always turn into a touchdown. I mean, but.
That was one of Auburn's better games out of the quarterback position since the Bo Nix injury.
My thing with Auburn's quarterbacks is Hugh Freeze and his offensive staff should know exactly what they have.
Yep.
And they should stop putting these guys in position to continue making mistakes. And they did for, you know, 3.5 quarters, they did that against Oklahoma.
Well, after the midpoint of the first quarter, it's like early on, there were a couple of things that from the middle of the first quarter till, you know, the middle of the fourth quarter, it was pretty damn good.
Yeah. What's really troubling about next year seeming like such a high-stakes season for Auburn is how many of the guys on offense right now who are out there because they're the best guy at their position and they give Auburn the best chance to win, how many of those guys are seniors right now playing their last year of eligibility? Auburn is starting a quarterback and a running back and a tight end and 3 or 4 offensive linemen and 2 or 3 receivers who will not be on next year's team. Like that's where it is right now offensively. And so you're going to – like it's really troubling that you're not getting the results you want. And I know they're getting some – you know, there are stats you can point to. But as far as the wins and losses, you're not getting the results you want with an offense that is going to have to largely rebuild next year, because you're replacing a lot of the key pieces on this year's team with whoever is next up.
Yeah, the key for next year is going out and getting the right transfer quarterback. That will be a priority no matter who they sign as a freshman, and it's got to be a guy that already runs a similar system. They can't get in here and expect to teach somebody this system and have them execute it at the level that it has to be executed right now, which seems to be at the 99.9th percentile to be effective for a full 4 quarters.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in again, 334-321-1390 here on the Monday Drive.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 19 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Yeah, we'd love your thoughts on That tough. I mean, tough isn't even a way to describe it. I mean, that was a
heart-wrenching,
gut-wrenching shot below the belt. Yeah. I mean, it was terrible. It was one where, I mean, there was no question who the better team was from early on in the ball game. Yeah. And the players played so well. That's where you really feel bad. I mean, I feel like I don't know how much better Auburn can play than that. I'm sure you clean up a couple
except
of things.
Except for a moment, yeah.
They've got and what I hear is people saying, well, it's a bunch of guys that don't know how to win. Well, a lot of these guys have won. A lot of these guys are young guys who have won everywhere they've been. They've got to have help, though. They can't, you know, they can't do it themselves there at the end. That's where, you know, you've got to have that leadership has got to get you through the tough times down the stretch, especially when you've got a lead like Auburn had, a double-digit lead.
And being in the post-game interviews with the players, you could absolutely tell they were devastated, that they care about this team, that they're invested in the program, the coaches, their fellow teammates. And you could see it on the field by how hard they played. And I do feel like there's a little something, too, they need to learn to win. But I feel like all they have to do is get over the hump.
Yeah.
Right? Just get over, get that first win, wherever it is, however it is, and maybe they can get a little bit of a roll.
Well, building a lead into the fourth quarter is the hard part. I mean, it's not the only part of the job, because the point is to have the lead when the fourth quarter is over. But I'd much rather be in a situation where it's like, they need to figure out how to close games after leading through three quarters or three and a half quarters. Then you need to find out how to get competitive in football games, because I mean clearly it's a next step that needs to happen, and I don't know if based on his history, I don't know if Hugh Freeze will be the one to help them take the next step and consistently close out games where they have these sorts of leads. But I would not question effort or
desire.
I don't get that sense at all. I think it's mental mistakes and miscues, and you're back to being it wasn't just turnovers. But you're back to being the race car driver that can't avoid the crash, right? Like Auburn went into the Auburn was in the final lap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the final. It's appropriate we got this guy on the phone. Auburn was in the final turn, right? And they hit the wall again.
Well,
I can't believe it.
I can't understand the five wide on third and four.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean,
that was that one. To me, the passing on first and second down after the Jarquez thing is more confusing than the five wide on third and four. Because the five wide on third and four
five
was
wide on third and four. I'm thinking it's got to be a quarterback draw.
See,
I'm
thinking Hugh Freeze thought maybe we can pass and get a first down and catch him off guard because they're expecting run, and he didn't consider the risk associated with. Well, what happens?
Forgotten. What happens if interceptions can happen?
If we turn it over here, our defense has played pretty well. So even a turnover,
I wouldn't take a chance on doing anything to turn it over, because the lead's only five.
But the defense didn't even get a chance to stop him.
I know. Dude. All right. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Spectre is next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
Hey, I kind of like your NASCAR analogy there. But let me talk about this third and three. I mean, yeah, third and three, right? White, five wide outs.
Three or four.
All right. You know, we have a 20-point defense, and that's about what they give up just about every game. Not more than that, unless we get wiped out by some Alabama or Georgia. But anyway, that particular call, I believe, was tried to catch them off guard, thinking it's going to be a quarterback sneak with only 3 yards to go. Well, this is where the execution comes in. I mean, you know, you can question Freeze making a bad call there, but still the option is in the quarterback's hands. He could either go for the – if he's got an opening up straight up the line, if the line opens it up, let him go. But it didn't happen. I seen it on the replay. I mean, I, from the camera angle, it must have been one of those cameras that come down on the field. I can't think of what they call them.
The sky cam cut thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sky cam. And it got right down almost at quarterback level. And I could not even see the receiver over the line. So my this is where it comes with a fifth-year senior making a decision. Either throw the damn ball away, run it, but do not just throw it. I didn't even see the receiver.
Well, I had two other people tell me today that watching the film that if the ball's a little higher or the guy doesn't step back, it's a touchdown. I mean, Peyton is trained, and the quarterbacks are trained to do is don't. You know, you react to this. You see this. Here's what you do, and the ball goes there, and it's supposed to then be whatever. Yeah. And it wasn't a terrible pass. It was a great play by the Oklahoma player and the Oklahoma defense to do a very good job of baiting and then stepping up and then dropping back. I mean,
That's where your senior quarterback
needs
to be able to read.
See, I saw that senior quarterback for Georgia do it three times Saturday too. I mean,
we've seen this go wrong time and time again. So my thing is, you should take that option out of his hands at that time of the game because you know he doesn't
take a chance.
Right.
You know,
well, I agree with that part.
Well, you know, Specter, we talked to Don Dunn on Friday, and Don Dunn loves to tell you, live to punt. You know, punt's the most important play in football. Get to the punt and then execute it.
You want every possession to end with a kick, either a punt, a field goal, or an extra.
And I'll tell you what, I maintain, Specter, if either of Auburn's drives in the fourth quarter, the drive that ends with the missed field goal or the drive that ends with the pick six, if either of those drives end with a punt, Oklahoma doesn't win that football game because of the amount they would have to cover with a quarterback who had not thrown the ball consistently into coverage throughout that game. If Auburn pins them deep on either of those possessions, with the way Oklahoma's offense is played, I think Auburn wins the game.
Exactly. If Thorne makes that completion on 3rd and 3, we're not even talking about this. We win the game.
Oh, for sure. Oh no! If you get one more first down on the first down or two,
you don't know what play would have been called next.
Yeah, who knows?
You're right. But just based on the you're thinking if Jarquez gets a 20-yard run after Auburn gets the ball back early in the fourth quarter, they're probably going to win the game.
Let me say this. You know, I'm going to tell you, Peyton played a good game to that point, and I'm still questioning. Peyton Thorne is not going to be here next year. Why aren't we putting our other quarterbacks on the field?
Because until now, it's been about this year. You can't be concerned about next year when you're trying to show that you can win this year. Because that's one of the things that Hugh Freeze is trying to show to recruits, is that we can be better than last year. I don't know that this record's going to be... You know, there's a chance, but it's getting tougher and tougher.
And I would be surprised if any other quarterback on the roster returning is starter next year. I think they're going to bring in a top recruit they're going to sign, and I fully expect them to sign a top transfer, and those will be the top two competing for the job, I think, in the spring.
I think if it were closer between the quarterbacks, Hugh Freeze might consider who's got eligibility remaining and who doesn't. Right now, he's got to play the guy he thinks gives him the best chance to win, even if that guy's a graduating senior. Yeah,
Auburn needs wins, period.
Right.
Appreciate it, Specter.
Think about next year.
Yep. Specter, we got to get to break. We need to get to our final break here of hour number one. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Monday Drive.
Before every Auburn home, 1-1-3-9-0. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Updating you, let's see, Braves must-win situation for the Braves after the Mets win game one of the doubleheader, 8-7, and a wild finish there. Yep. Braves up 1-0 and threatening. Yeah. Nearly had a double run there.
It's a nice play by the right fielder.
Right, as the Braves lead 1-0 with two down in the bottom half of the fourth inning. Let's get back to the Drive hotline.
Terry.
And Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, guys.
I want to ask you guys a question. Ask Brian a question. First of all, we're not even talking about the pass, the interception by Peyton Thorne. If they just don't get fancy on the 1 yard line and just give it to Sean Jackson or Hunter.
Jarquez, give the ball to Jarquez, and you don't have to run him out of the Wildcat. You can give the ball to
Jarquez.
Or just
run the tush push. That's usually
good. Yeah, that worked.
Yeah, maybe
yard. I'm not playing football, but the quarterback under center.
Yeah.
I mean, and Sean Jackson, I've never seen a player more misused in my life than Sean Jackson. Put that big 240-pound monster back here and let him get a yard. He'll get it.
I like Sean on special teams. You know, I think that, yeah, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing him in a short yardage. But I think Auburn's got multiple running backs that I'd feel pretty good about.
And where does Auburn rank in kickoff stand since he's doing so good?
What was that?
Where does Auburn rank in kickoff returns?
Oh well, I mean, I think. I mean, does anyone? I mean.
I'm not even really sure.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Sean's like a blocker on special teams sometimes. Right. He's not touching the ball.
Yeah. Give it to the ball. And Oklahoma's not expecting it, and that big hoss is going to get you a yard.
Yeah, well, the next time you see Auburn line up with a fullback in the backfield, I'll probably faint.
Right. Brian, when is Alex McPherson going to return?
Well, that's an interesting question. He has warmed up and kicked the last two games.
Did you watch him this past week?
I did not watch him closely.
I watched a little bit, and he was it was a struggle for him to get it from 40.
Yeah, yeah. So,
the strength, I just don't think.
I know Towns did not perform his best, but I thought that what happened there at the end of the first half kind of messed with him a little bit. But he did get a second chance and same kick.
Was Towns limping in the second half? There were people wondering about that.
I watched
it on replay. It looked like his foot slipped.
Okay.
So
one time
as Alex gets better and stronger and healthier, maybe they can bring him in for the shorter field goals. If they don't want to redshirt him, and
definitely
and
want keep, to keep Towns
on kickoffs and longer field goals until Alex is all the way back.
Terry, we've got our top of the hour break. Don't mind at all if you want to hang on if you've got some more. I guess not. But we've got other calls holding that we will get to when we come back for hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And we're going to get right to the phones here after we take care of a little business. Hour number two of the Drive. Brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic. Thank goodness I didn't need to go back to see them again. They're great folks. And they're East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. You can join us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And I don't want anybody to take what I said wrong. The way I said it, I'm realizing people might think, oh, I don't want to go there. No, I would strongly... recommend the orthopedic clinic if you have any orthopedic problems. I was just...
You just don't want another orthopedic problem.
I've seen them enough lately. No, I took a spill after the ball game on Saturday and thought I might have cracked the wrist, but fortunately not. So, all right, let's get to the Drive Hotline, and Brett gets us started this hour. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I couldn't hear good. Did Terry talk about the Wildcat that Auburn ran?
Yes, he mentioned that, and that was one of those, and why are you doing that when you've got...
I think Terry's point was that if Auburn converts on that drive, you're not throwing the ball as much in the fourth quarter to begin with. And you would hope we're not having this kind of conversation.
Oh, I agree. I agree with him 100%. You know, but please forget the one Wildcat. Heck, we ran it twice.
Yep. Ran it on first down and fourth down. And it got, I think it got zero and zero.
Those are in fact, Brett, those are the two on that drive, the drive that ends at the 1 yard line for Auburn. Auburn runs seven times in Oklahoma territory, and the two plays twice they get zero, and the two times they get zero, it's the two Wildcat direct snaps.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying last couple of weeks I'd love Stat Tiger or whoever to give me the stats on when Auburn rushes three. I would love, since after the year that Cody Burns was running the Wildcat, we had an excellent offensive line, and Wildcat was fairly new.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Auburn's success rate on running the Wildcat down around the goal line against teams that are 6-6, 7-5 or better. I would bet you it's abysmal.
Oh, I would say the average per play is pretty low. What is the percentage that anybody else has touched the ball when Auburn's run the Wildcat too?
Right.
I mean, you've got to at least have the concern that maybe he'll throw it or maybe he'll hand it off.
And if you're gonna run, if you're gonna run that play, then run it with Peyton Thorne, because there's a threat of throwing the football and teams
or handing
can't
it off.
Teams can't sell out that. And I would also point out, Brett, I agree with everything you said, but I would point out that when Cody Burns was running the Wildcat successfully, when Gus Malzahn brought it to college football and had, you know, Arkansas doing it, like, it was novel.
Right.
It was teams hadn't been defending it in 2006 and 2008 and 2000. Yeah. Like that now you're talking about college football players that have seen it their entire lives. Literally.
Yeah.
If you're a sophomore in college football right now, you were a baby when Darren McFadden was running the Wildcat.
Yeah, and Dan, I can assure you that Danny Stutzman, whatever his name is, has seen the Wildcat.
Yeah.
I mean, Jackson is not exactly your A1 battering ram down around the goal line. I mean, it ain't sure doesn't weigh 200. I don't know how much he weighs, but
I wanted Auburn to avoid mistakes, Brett. I would have loved to see Jackson throw the ball on either of those, simply because teams were so certain. Teams are so certain you're going to run that it's almost like if you're not willing to throw the ball out of that look, then crumple it up and throw it in the garbage.
Yep.
One last thing.
What I would do.
To me, a huge key in the game was second half. We stop them. They punt to us. We make yet another penalty receiving the punt. Backs us up. Then we come out. And we get breaking the huddle with 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That should never happen in major college football. I know it does, but that is just, that's awful. And then we punt to them. We hit their guy while he's calling for a fair catch. There's 15 yards. Then we get a PI. So basically, we just gave up so much field position in that period of time. It's unbelievable.
Auburn went from second and three to Oklahoma kicking a field goal.
Yeah.
With a series of self-inflicted wounds.
Auburn had like three penalties in four or five plays. They had a couple of penalties in there as well, but they were still able to get the field goal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hate to say this as an Auburn fan, but does any of this really surprise you?
I'm a little surprised.
I don't know. It's getting to the point where I mean, not right now, but if
I go back to August, I'm a little surprised.
I see. I think all three of the losses have been surprising in their own ways.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, Brett, and I think at some point the losses can reach a number where they stop being surprising, and I think that's what Hugh Freeze desperately needs to avoid over these next three road games. Mm-hmm. But I know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we have to worry about doing anything stupid to lose the next one. That is a good thing.
Georgia needs to win this next ball game. I mean, you know, it didn't kill them to lose that game, and that was a wild one.
They have some really tough games.
They really do. So they absolutely need to take it out on Auburn for their homecoming. Mm-hmm. Enjoy their homecoming this Saturday. All right, 334-321-1390. Who have we got up next, Drew?
Steve.
Steve is next. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, I'm not one of these, you know, fire people, whatever, so-and-so people. I mean, we're not very good. I mean, you know, talent level is better. But my concern is that it was just the operational mistakes. I mean, you know, you've had trouble scoring all year. You get down around the one-yard line. It doesn't go well. Kick the field goal. Get the point. I mean, and at the end of the first half, I still don't understand that. I mean, on the second down play, you burn a bunch of time, then use your last
then take time out. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't have the third down play called, you just and there's a scrum or whatever. I don't remember what took so long. You just go to the fish ones and let the clock run to 3 seconds. You call a timeout. And then you don't have to fire drill an 18-year-old freshman. Yeah, he's been great, you know, but he's still an 18-year-old freshman playing at home in front of a big crowd. And, you know, that's just – you're just finding trouble we don't need to have.
No, management was definitely a concern.
I mean, you just sort – and even like the first touchdown, and I don't normally go back and watch losses, but, I mean, we were in cover zero with an eight-gap blitz with no spy. Everybody playing man coverage, running downfield. He runs by the linebacker. There's nobody there. It was just a track meet for him to the end zone. I mean, that's just a bad call. I mean, it's just you should never call that on that with that kind of. The only thing the kid could do was run. That's a great play on his part, but once again, we put ourselves in a situation for that to happen. So, you know. I love the effort. It was a great day. Mm-hmm. Auburn fans are the best fans in the world. I mean, the place was packed until, you know, near the end when people started to leave because they were shocked and mad. But
heck, there were some Oklahoma folks leaving early in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of them in town, and they were fairly, you know, fairly nice people overall, I mean, I think, from my experience with them. But I can live with us not being as talented as other teams because we're coming off 4 or 5 years of the worst recruiting that we've ever had. And we really only have one class. I don't even count it as a class and a half. But when we do some stuff in the games, you said it earlier, Bill, it's so funny because I said this tailgate. I said, if every possession ends with a kick, we win today.
I just remember hearing that years ago, and it's absolutely right.
Yeah, the last six plays, the last eight plays should have been run, punt. Run, punt.
Mm-hmm.
Run, and punt.
I've got a feeling it wouldn't have just been run. I've got a feeling it wouldn't have just been run, punt. Right. The way Oklahoma was, just the way they were moving around, the way they were carrying themselves, yep. I think they were ready for Auburn to go ahead and just be able to pound them.
And that's something I remember hearing from coaches who sort of get frustrated with offensive coordinators who don't challenge a defense enough. That's a situation. After that Jarquez run, I think a lot of offensive coordinators, a lot of coaches would tell you, you want to test to see if Oklahoma's got the metal to win this football game. If they've got if their defense is going to respond, like
or as Coach Dye would say, it's like
METTL.
Are they man enough?
Yeah, I mean it's gut check time there. It's gut check time there, and instead that's not
been in years. I hadn't seen Auburn offensive linemen look like they were having fun. Uh-huh. There was some pancake blocks. They were getting up. They were high-fiving. There were guys saying, talking a little trash. I mean, they were moving people out of the way. And, yeah, I mean, you know, it's easy. Listen, everybody's got hindsight. Everybody's hindsight is great. But I think you're absolutely right, Bill. I said, you know, it may have been run, touchdown, extra point. I mean, but, yeah, it just you got a very experienced coaching staff, and I think they're great coaches, and they're doing – what they need to do to recruit and get the talent in there. But, wow, man, sometimes asking people to do things that they're not capable of doing is the worst thing that a coach can do. You got to protect people from themselves. If a guy can't bunt, you don't ask him to bunt.
Right.
He may strike out, but you don't let him pop it up to the catcher. You know, so, well, but, you know. War Eagle, anyways, it was great until the last 8 minutes of the day.
So. You're right.
I got asked to bunt a lot in Little League because I couldn't hit.
Could you bunt?
Sometimes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, 334.
Wasn't good at that either, to be
great
honest.
Great stuff, Steve. 334-321-1390. Jack is up next. Hey, Jack.
Hey, guys. Brian, I listened to you on the Brain Drain with Jay Tate Saturday night, and I totally agree with you.
Yes, so do I.
I'd love to hear Dan and Bill's thoughts on this as well. What in the world was that dude with the Pat Dye quote? That was a question.
Oh, man.
What in the world was that?
I don't know who that was. First of all, this is a generational great quote. It's Pat Dye's quote on Wrestling with Them Angels. It came after the Tennessee loss in 1981 or two. I don't remember exactly when it was. But when you're asking questions, you're asking the coach a question. You're not,
It's like he was trying to do a pep talk, or like here's something you can go and tell the players.
He basically, and I don't know who it was, basically recited the entire.
Yeah, he read
speech.
It. Sounded like he was reading it.
Yeah,
it sounded like he pulled it up on his phone.
That's not actually a question.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't usually go to the post game press conferences because by the time we're on the air here on Mondays, that's old news. Probably in hindsight, I probably should have been there. I wouldn't be hurting like I am.
But anyway, I don't want to knock anybody in the media necessarily, and I'm not mad about or anything. I just found it unusual and kind of funny.
There's also why I've always enjoyed state your name and your outlet before you ask your question, so that we don't wonder about mysteries like this.
Not so much for the coaches, but for everyone. So they're going. Who asked that question?
Yeah, but Jack, no, you got me. I mean, I think that's just someone who, that's a fan who
maybe
was
just a little inexperienced.
I feel like they're
asked dumb questions myself,
and I think that, it's not just a dumb question.
I don't even mean to call it dumb, but
say that seemed like someone who was dealing with the loss in their own personal way, and decided, they thought maybe it would help to ask that question of Hugh Freeze in the moment, but. You're right. It didn't necessarily meet the old time and place test.
Right. It happens.
Right. Well, talking about the game, I think it's been dwelled on enough, all the negatives of what Auburn should have done differently in the fourth quarter and on the fourth and goal from the one and on the first drive and towards the end of the first half. But, if there was one positive that I think we can take away from that game, and I'm sure this is the biggest thing Coach Freeze has in his pocket on the recruiting trail. I'll tell you what, those freshmen that were in the game, every single one of them sure looked the part, don't they? They could be big-time players.
DeMarcus Riddick, I think he played more snaps Saturday than he played all year combined.
Yeah, I think he played, I actually just wrote it, I think it was 16 snaps, is that right?
Maybe he played 19 snaps coming in or something. But, boy, he was all over the place.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Absolutely. And one more question for Brian, and then I'll hang up and listen. Brian, have you heard anything about Deuce Knight, one way or another, what he might do and when his final decision might come? And always good to talk to you guys.
Positive with Deuce Knight is he's been in Auburn four of the five weekends of the college football season.
The negative
nine times out of ten, I would say Auburn's got this locked up.
Yeah.
The negative is, and we don't know all the reasons, but he's just not – making the final move.
Well, he's also not talking when he's leaving.
Yeah,
and we don't know, how beneficial it is for him maybe to be coming back. What's he getting out of coming every time? But it sure does seem like
the same thing
like
that other
Auburn,
players
Auburn
get
had better when they have some other plans.
Go on
I'm
visits
sure,
during
I'm
the NIL
sure
era.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
So I would say 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, I felt like really, really, really good about it. Like, I wouldn't say done deal, but almost a done deal. And now I'm just very wary of the situation.
Now you get the sense that they sort of like multiple fan bases feeling good about the situation.
Well, instead of feeling good about it, it's more like being worried or not sure what's going on. The other thing I'll add, and maybe that changes the next couple of days. I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing I will add is Auburn has stayed in contact with Juju.
Lewis.
Yeah, Juju Lewis, the quarterback from Carrollton, Georgia, who's committed to USC still, right? Mm-hmm. So if things fall apart with Deuce, and I'm not saying they are, there's still options out there for a very good quarterback for Auburn. And because of the situation Auburn is in now, they are going to put a lot into signing a good high school quarterback and into signing
and,
a transfer.
Yeah, you've said that every time, and I'm right there with you on that. Appreciate the call, Jack. 334-321-1390. And Dak is up next. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. Good to hear your voice. I don't get to hear it much lately, so I'm glad to be able to listen today. Now, I would say the situation with the quarterback is I think it's about money. He's waiting around so he can, you know, control what he's asking for. But my main question is, who is calling the plays? Do we know that?
Oh, I think Hugh Freeze is calling most of the plays. But I don't know how many specifically. Right. You know, I don't think you're going to get that direct answer.
Sure. That's what I was afraid
of.
Well,
he is definitely making the decision there, especially at the end of the ball game. Yeah. You know he's got
to. Yeah, I get that.
If he's not calling it, he's saying yes or no. And that's where, again, I didn't go through today. I was thinking, because a couple of other people had said they might do it as well, I still wonder who's on the headset with Peyton Thorne and why didn't somebody or who – they're obviously – Hugh Freeze would have had to have been the one to say run it or else, or we're okay with the RPO.
Right.
Right. And that was going to be my next question. But on the interception for the pick six, man, it was a great play. And they had to have seen that blitz look where they drop back in coverage. Oh, yeah. That couldn't have been the first time they've done that. But our receiver, and y'all may have talked about this, I don't know because I just picked up about 15 minutes ago, but the receiver juked his guy. He was wide ass open. All he had to do is lay it up, he would have scored. And I get why he drilled it in there like a slant. I get the reason. But they had to have seen that look where the linebackers walk up in the gaps and then they bounce out. And that's what puzzles me, man. There's no way that's the first time they did that. He had to have recognized that. All he had to do is lay that ball up, and it was a touchdown.
Well, it was a touchdown.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I'll
end this. So I went back and watched last year's two. The one thing that just puzzles me is how bad we are in a two-minute drill. We are absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Last year I thought we were
pretty good.
Well,
am I wrong?
Say that again, Phil.
I thought Auburn was a lot better last year.
Oh, my God. We were terrible, Mr. Bill. Oh,
okay.
I went back and broke down the Georgia, the Ole Miss, New Mexico State, and Alabama game. And it literally, I don't think we completed three passes in all those games in a two-minute drill.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I think the quarterback situation, he doesn't do well under a lot of pressure.
Well, Cal's probably the only productive end of game two-minute drill Auburn had.
It was terrible. It was terrible by two-minute drill standards. And this is what I saw. Number one, we take too many sacks. Throw the ball away. There's no reason to take a sack. But the thing that I noticed, there is never an intermediate route or short route. Every route we run is beyond 15 yards by all receivers. And I've never seen that before. And last year against Georgia, and I saw it again against Cal, is on third down and 16 and fourth down and 16, we run all goes, and then two receivers turn around at 16 yards. Like, it's almost like drawing up plays on the sideline. And, of course, they were in too high with man under. You're not going to get open doing that.
No.
You're not going to get open doing that. And against Arkansas, we had plenty of time. 3 minutes and 35 seconds left in that game to score 10 points. We had plenty of time. And you would think there was 20 seconds on the clock because every route – every throw was beyond 15 yards. Every one of them.
Good point. You're absolutely right.
All right, guys. I'll hang up.
Good hearing from you, Dak. Yep, we're here for you, folks. Come on in and join us. Some great points that Dak made and that everybody's been bringing up. We need to get to our
questions.
Break.
The questions are becoming more about, and this is something from, and I understand. Look, I understand what Hugh Freeze inherited, but the questions are moving away from. How do you get the roster to where it can be in a position to win some of these games? And they move into, you can start analyzing things like philosophy and decision making,
game management
and clock management and stuff like that. And there were times, I think, in all three of the losses, that's what's frustrating.
Yeah, Auburn hasn't been the team with the far inferior talent that that couldn't have won any of those games.
I think the answers
would be... How many times did Hugh Freeze say today he felt like we should be 5-0?
If Auburn's three losses had played out like LSU last year, right? Like your answers, it'd be easier to talk about, you know, what's going wrong and everything that would need to change before you start talking. But when you're talking about close losses where you make critical mistakes after putting yourself, especially in this last one, after putting yourself in what should be position to win the game,
yeah,
it's tougher questions, tougher answers.
Yep, and one more reminder, again, shout out to Stuart Carter, Stat Tiger, who posted that in Hugh Freeze's career, he's 44% in games decided by 7 points or less. And over the last 5 years, 33%. Is all he's won in games decided by 7 points or less. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join us here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, this is Jacob Goen, voice of the Auburn High Tigers.
From AuburnSports.com. And B-Matt, we're a little behind as far as breaks. We don't have a call right now, so let's go ahead and talk about your Monday musings presented by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Yep, and basically I talked more about I just chose to talk about how hard I thought the players played against Oklahoma, how invested they are in the program, how much it hurt them seeing them after the game, and that's a sign that this team is going to continue to compete. And if they can get over the hump, maybe some good things will happen, and not to sort of throw in the towel on this season just because of such a frustrating start.
And then you asked a question like that of Coach Freeze, who then
he didn't like the word spiral.
He didn't like that.
But I need to find another word.
You do have to be concerned about younger players.
You do,
that have never been in a situation like this, and having them getting discouraged about this year, and maybe thinking about the future and not focusing on each game.
And we've been around long enough to see a couple of teams spiral. Certainly. So, but he does not feel like it's an issue with this year's team. I don't think it's an issue either, right? But I did want him to address it today in his press conference because there have been some heartbreaking losses, and this team had much higher expectations going into the season, and this was far from the start they were hoping to have, I think.
Or should have had. Right. I mean, you really feel like this team has worked hard enough, and they deserve to have a better record than 2-3, now.
They've got a bunch of veterans over there that care about the team, care about football, have worked their tail off all off season, and this is not the way they expected this to go. So it's disappointing, but in other ways you feel like they are still invested and still going to compete, and some good things, they'll be rewarded for their hard work eventually. Not a promise, but that's just the way I see it right now.
To me, the big concern would be, I mean, we'll see how the next 6-7 games go for Auburn, of course, but I think a lot of folks, especially when they mentioned Billy Napier, and we've seen this before too, I think to an extent at Texas A&M, where when a team signs a big recruiting class and then fails to live up to expectations in the first season with those recruits, there's a concern that a lot of those recruits may desire to reopen their recruitment after 1 year and explore the market for their services at a place that maybe won more games in their first season in college football than the school they chose. And I guess that, like, you're plugged in. Like, how real is that concern through 5 games of a 12-game season for Auburn that players from Hugh Freeze recruits from his first 2 classes, and especially guys that are maybe getting playing time and factor into the future of this program, might still decide to explore their options after the season?
Well, we talked a lot about what Hugh Freeze has struggled with recently, his game management, et cetera. One thing he's really, really good at is building relationships with players, one-on-one relationships. And I think that's going to really help him when it comes, obviously, to recruiting and also to retention. It's a lot easier when you're winning and things get much more complicated when you're not winning. I don't think Auburn's reached some point where everybody's going to take off and say, this is not working. I just don't think Auburn is there yet. And I'd be surprised if they get there at some point this season. And it looks like the mess just tied it up. Or maybe they're just showing a replay of the first game.
Oh, I was going to say, man, I didn't even know they were back from the
No, this must be – this is a replay of game one.
Yeah, it's got to be. Okay, because, they're going going to the 7th right now with the Braves still leading it
1-0.
All right, and then your musical musing today?
Exile. They're a band that had one hit back in, I think it was 78 or so, Kiss You All Over, like one of those soft rock.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Fun yep. song.
It was. And then they didn't have any other success. And then about 5 years after that, they switched to country.
Well, what happened, well, one of the things, I can sort of jump in here, what happened is country music changed and pop sort of became more specific genres, and you didn't right. have as much crossover. When you got into the 80s, you stopped having as many many different songs played on the for top 40, if you right. will. And Exile sort of fit more into that country genre, and you listen to Kiss You All Over now, and it sounds like a country yeah. song now.
I believe 7 years ago today was the was Tom Petty's fatal overdose, and then the reports that he had passed away, which were premature, and then I think he actually did pass away a couple days, like, because October 2nd is the day Tom Petty passed away, mm-hmm. but September 30th, 2017, the news broke that he was in poor health, and I think some folks maybe prematurely jumped to the Tom Petty has passed away, but it's 7 years ago this week yeah. is the very tragic passing of Tom Petty.
One of a great music artist and one of the underrated ones, I think. And one more thing on Exile that I thought was interesting was when they went to country, they had this run from 83 to 87, I think it was, where they had 10 number one country songs, which to me is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no kidding. No doubt about it. And again, Uncle Keith's the yes. sponsor.
Delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama. You can get it at Publix. You can get it at Piggly Wiggly, Renfro's, statewide and surrounding states. Right here in Auburn, you can also get it at Kroger's. I see it there every time I'm in there to shop. Give it a try. You can also order online and get 15% off using discount code BMAT15. Fresh as you would ever want salsa to be. And once you try it once, you will absolutely love it and never want a different style salsa.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. JR, hold on. You're up. When we come back, you can get in line behind him, 334-321-1390, here on The Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. And we've got Drew at the controls as we head back to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And JR has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, JR.
Hey, I kind of joined in late, but I know y'all probably done talked about that interception. But I was wondering if anybody seen where Jeremiah Wright actually kind of knocked him back into the ball, because he almost knocked him down, almost knocked him out of it, but almost like he hit him and knocked him into where it was going.
Yeah,
I didn't know if anybody talked about that.
So no, Oklahoma, on that play, Oklahoma has, I think six guys at the line of scrimmage between the tackles sort of showing blitz. And then I think one or two of them drop back, take a step forward to sell the blitz.
Both linebackers look like they
drop back. And then back up into the middle of the field. Jeremiah Wright, one of the Auburn guards, he gives the guy a shove kind of as he begins his back pedal, and sort of, the guy gets a boost almost from the Auburn offensive lineman blocking him, and it helps him. I mean, he's still in excellent position. I don't think Peyton saw the guy, and he's in excellent position to make the play. But he got an extra step or so thanks to a shove from an Auburn lineman.
It's always something.
40 years of being an Auburn fan, we well conditioned. That's all I got to say. But I appreciate y'all taking my call.
All right, good hearing from you, JR.
All right, bye bye.
And again, I mean, the Auburn defense, you can point to. Yes, there are some mistakes. There are some
two plays.
Yeah, I thought Auburn
really, and two plays, and you're going to have a breakdown occasionally.
We had a caller mention, sort of lamenting the lack of a spy on the touchdown run. I wondered if Auburn had a spy or two on that field, and they weren't happy with the performance. Because they go to Riddick more. After that,
he was not in for that play.
He was not in for that play, and didn't Hugh Freeze talk at the press conference today about? I thought we had to upgrade the level of athlete out there chasing, chasing the Oklahoma quarterback. And while you love that you're not going to get as many, you don't think you're going to get as many mistakes from your seniors. Sometimes you send a freshman out there, and while he might make a mistake a senior doesn't make, he's also maybe a step or two faster than some of the upperclassmen on the team, and that seemed to
like that was Riddick for sure.
Yeah, that was Riddick. Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean Auburn's got veteran options. They could be playing instead of Sylvester Smith and Caleb Harris too, and yet you see 18 and 19 out there a ton. You
need to see Caleb Harris out there more. He's a player.
He really is.
Yeah. Well, no.
He had one huge hit. Yep.
I think 18 and 19 are going to be playing a lot, like the rest of the season. I would imagine that Jay Crawford. Put an argument.
Yeah, did he come out?
I don't know if he did.
No, he played every snap on defense.
I did not see him. I did not see a play that he wasn't
in his first
in
start.
There.
Yeah, and he hadn't played that much before then.
No, and they didn't even. I wonder if it was because he had an inexperienced quarterback or something. They didn't exactly test him. They didn't go at him.
No, there was no targets. He was not targeting the whole game.
I mean, let's think about. I mean, between Blockton, Amaris Williams, Falk is a second year player. But I mean, just first and second year guys that you're seeing a lot of on defense, right?
You said, the whole secondary, Malik, corners, and
I'm starting front to back. So Malik, and I mean Bobby Jameson Travis is second year out of junior college. You're seeing more of him this season. I mean, guys, these are guys who could be on next year's team. Malik Blockton, Bobby Jameson Travis, Keldrick Falk, Amaris Williams. You go to the linebacker, Riddick at linebacker. Practically everyone seeing minutes.
Kieron Crawford can get
Kieron Crawford deserves mention. I didn't mention he's a transfer, so I didn't think about
it. Didn't play a whole lot for whatever reason. I guess because they didn't feel like they needed him as much.
I guess not as much quarterback and pressure.
Or maybe Riddick took away some of his snaps.
And then in the secondary, Kane Lee and Jay Crawford. You expect Champ Anthony back next season, and 18 and 19. Smith and Harris.
Yeah.
I mean, you're close to I wonder how much Auburn's going to feel like they need to go shopping, depending on who they retain.
Well, they're bringing in some
players. Like, I wonder how much, but I wonder how much Auburn feels like they're going to need to shop for veteran help for this defense.
If you look at it, they're going to
need a veteran safety.
They're going to need a veteran defensive tackle too. They're losing a bunch of those guys who are transferred in, were upperclassmen, and this freshman group is really good. And you got another freshman group coming in, but you need a couple experienced guys in that group too.
All right, let's get back to the phone. We've got a full bank of calls. Now I think Jeff is up first. Hey, Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing?
All right.
Well, wish I could say I've been happier. Sadly, I've become so numb to, you know, you don't even get upset anymore. It's become that hurting. It hurts so much. You know, watching these games the last 2 weeks, I was at the Arkansas game. You know, Auburn has become to the point now, I love this program, to almost wait for the bad moment now. And that's a bad state to be in.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. And that's because
that's
Auburn
what I worry about the players getting to.
Yeah.
As that game Saturday, you know, you said, can we? No, something's going to happen. I'm listening to the call with Andy. And God bless Andy and Jason. It was excruciating for them. You could hear them calling that. And I hurt right with them, and I couldn't even listen on the radio anymore. It just I don't know where we go as a program anymore. I really don't. You're talking about someone who's been a fan since 1978, the end of Doug Barfield era. And we've gone through the ups and downs with this program, but right now it almost – it tears me apart just to tune in each Saturday now because, you know, I don't understand. I don't believe in snake bitten, but right now I believe we're a snake bitten program. It seems like we can't get out of our own way.
Yeah, it feels like it. I mean, it's the roughest stretch Auburn football has had in 75 years.
Yep. That's tough to imagine.
It's painful. You know, that team over in West Alabama, they win these games. It's amazing. If that was Auburn the other night, there's no way we win that game. But this team seems to always find a way, and I'll never root for them. But they win these games. I don't understand it, you know. And I don't, you know, I don't want to rant about it all day, but it hurts.
Well,
I can't tell you how painful it is,
Jeff. You remember? I mean, Coach Dye talking about, you know, the first thing you have to do when you're losing is you get to the point where you're losing close. But then you've got to win close before you can win big.
And
what Alabama has done and been doing is they win, and they're used to winning, and they expect to win, and they never get flustered because they just expect that they're going to win in a situation like that. You're right. A lot of teams, when Georgia came back and scored, when they came all the way back and took that lead, that would have been it. But then Alabama comes back, and it doesn't hurt when you got Ryan Williams.
Tosses it up, one-on-one coverage.
A lot of teams don't have the horses to get up 28-0 on Georgia
And then
hold. You're right. But any
team that blows a lead like that usually has a really tough time winning if they ever get behind.
No, but to have the medal or the manhood, you know, depending on which way, you know, to come back and win in that situation, you're right. You're right. It's tough. Now, one thing I'm going to – not that you'd said anything wrong there, Jeff, but I do feel like – it's almost unfair to Hugh Freeze to talk about this stretch of Auburn football if you're talking about before 2023.
Sure.
Like, because he showed up.
It's still part of
it. But when you talk about all him. Yeah,
no.
But it's like this stretch, as far as I'm concerned, this stretch of Auburn football started in 2023 because this is the Hugh Freeze era.
Right.
Now, you can point to things that happened when Brian Harsin was the coach. I think this feels very different either year of the Harsin era, though.
But
the results are the same.
If you have a fourth straight losing season, you don't forget the first two.
You don't forget the first two, but I would look at these, I mean, the three losses that Auburn had, and especially the loss Saturday. Right, like these don't feel like the losses where the league is pulling away from you, and the games aren't competitive in the second half. Now, if Auburn runs into that problem, you know the questions change. But you're right. I mean, it's in fact that Bill the blowing late leads feels like a new development for Auburn in this stretch. That wasn't Harsin's problem.
No, you're right. No.
That wasn't Gus Malzahn's problem at the end. Like Hugh Freeze has done a great job getting the roster back to where you can play competitive football games again.
Finishing
against Power Five conferences.
Yeah.
But if you can't finish, the results can end up being the same.
We got a quick Braves update of Suno with a two out, two RBI single. Yep. Braves lead 3-0, bottom of seventh.
Want to take a break, Bill?
Is it time? Yeah. We need to get to that final break. Appreciate the call, Jeff. John, hold on. You'll be up when we come back for the final segment here of the Monday Drive.
Ride and seek.